Hey, everybody. This is Jimmy DeGrasso. You're listening to the Ink Spot Podcast.
Have you ever thought about the doing voiceover?
Don't talk
I'm sorry.
Over me.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I won't talk over you.
Hey, everybody.
You ever want to do
Jimmy
it, man?
DeGrasso,
I'll get you started.
Don't.
All right. I'll try.
So.
Take one. The Ink Spot.
Like I said, it's no music, no life. I think it's the blood of life. It's a soul of life.
This is the Ink Spot.
Brought to you by Music Ink Studios, San Jose.
This one we call Struck Down.
Ladies and gentlemen, roadies and rock stars, fans of music, bust out your metronomes. We're going to try keeping time with this guy, the man you hear playing those drums, the hardest working man in rock and roll, and a friend of mine, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jimmy DeGrasso. How's it going, Jimmy? Say hi to everybody.
Hey, how's it going tonight?
It's going pretty good. It's going pretty good. I want to thank you for coming in and doing this. I appreciate it.
Certainly.
I know you get hit up by a lot of people, but you chose me because I'm really important. And, well, shit, man.
Okay.
No, I'm actually feel pretty privileged to have kind of become your friend before I even knew who you were, which was a funny story. Yeah, you laugh at that. I laugh at that shit.
Well, I think it's funny as
it
hell.
It is funny. I was sitting outside talking with this guy. A friend of mine asked me if I was fanning out, and I said, what the fuck are you talking about? And so I came in here and I Googled him, and I'm like, oh my goodness. So then I went outside and called him a son of a bitch. And we've been friends ever since.
Yeah, that's right.
It is pretty cool, man. At some point, I know I get to go up to your house in the Hollywood Hills and do some partying, right?
Yeah, right.
All
okay.
Right. So why are you always here?
Because I need to practice.
I would say you do.
I know.
No future at all. But honestly, we're down at Music Ink Studios, and I do see you here quite often. So what's up with that?
Well, you know, I've got a couple local projects, and we always rehearse at Music Ink. It's a really cool studio here in San Jose. And when I'm not touring, I teach drums here.
No way.
I do a lot of private lessons. So
oh, you do?
And it's a really great hang down here. So, you know, I teach over at the Rhythm Academy right next door.
So you're the reason why I can't get my voiceover done.
Right, because it's always so loud, right. Yeah.
They actually end up not hiring me and asking me who the drummer is, and he's available.
I'll try to play softer, sorry.
We'll see how it goes.
No, but it's a great hang down here, and like I said, the Rhythm Academy's been around for a few years. It kind of morphed out of when I had my drum shop, San Jose Pro Drum, and the manager, Paul Betrez, he started the Rhythm Academy here as a drum school. And it's gone really well, and we have a lot of students here, and it's really cool. We have everything from beginner to expert in all ages. And like I said, when I'm not touring, I come down here and teach. I have a really great time because, like, I have students anywhere from, like, 10 to 70.
No shit.
Yeah, it's really fun.
So you're on the in terms of, like, the future of rock and roll here.
You know, it's funny because I have some older students. They've been working their whole life, and one of their dreams was always learn to play drums, and they contact me, and I think that's really cool. They're not really aspiring to be touring musicians.
You sure?
They just really want to learn to play drums.
Okay.
And then I have the younger people, you know, the teenagers or even younger than that, and they're aspiring to tour and make recordings, albums, CDs. I don't even know what you call it now. And it's really fun. I don't even know. Like
internet files. I don't know.
No, it's really fun. And it keeps my chops up. So if I'm not touring, I'm always playing. So and then I have a studio at my house that I play a lot with some friends of mine. And then sometimes just to get out of there and have a different scenery, I come down here and play. Because you've seen me in the middle of the day. I'll just come down here and play for 2 hours.
Yeah, throwing rocks at you. Keeping time.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
I wonder who keyed my car.
You're welcome.
Do not key my car again.
I won't key your car.
Okay.
It says Sean is the best, though.
Just, oh, great.
You know. No, but I think that's pretty cool that you give back that way, teaching and whatnot. And you're kind of molding these kids. Do any of them get a little bit starstruck when they find out who you are and what you do?
Oh,
or do they know coming in?
Well, I think they know. I don't think they get starstruck or anything. I mean, they just want to learn how to play.
Right on.
And I've been teaching since I've been 10.
Really?
Yeah. So
wow.
So I was teaching when I was really young, and I think I'm a pretty good communicator.
I'm sorry, well, I don't understand you.
I'm the smart
ass. I don't really get you, man.
It's really fun, and it kind of keeps me young. It keeps my... Like, it's inspiring to me to see young people that want to play music, because there's so many distractions for especially teenagers with the internet and this and social media, and they can sit in their rooms all day and all night and, you know, go on whatever they go on, you know. I don't know. I have three teenagers, so I know. But I'd rather have them being active and doing sports and music,
right,
which they do.
Okay.
And no, it's fun to work with young people. It keeps me young.
Good.
Except for the wrinkles.
I don't know who told you kept you young. They're lying to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I want to know your beauty regimen. Do you face mask? I mean, what do you do? I'm curious.
Soap and water.
All right.
With the teenagers, you know, they asked me, like, you know, he wants to play drums. Should I let him play drums and this, that, or her? She wants to play drums. I go, there's nothing but positive that comes out of it. It's really right. Math and it's hand-eye coordination.
Yeah.
And just being cognizant and learning music theory. There's nothing negative.
Oh.
It's all about developing your ears and your physical stamina. There's nothing bad about it.
Keeps you in shape?
Yeah.
I bet it does.
You know, it teaches them to appreciate music, which a lot of them do, because it's funny, because the younger kids, they're really into the older music, which we consider classic rock.
Right?
Like the Beatles and Zeppelin and old Aerosmith.
Nothing new stands out for them.
Well, they're...
I mean, some, but honestly, I see people more into the Eagles and the Beatles than anything else.
No, and I totally agree. And I've had some students come in and bring me, like, hey, can you teach me how to play this song? And I couldn't tell you half the bands. And I'm like, and some of them are really, really good. I'm not familiar with. And I'm like, where is this from? Like, because I'm writing this down because I want to go listen to this
right
now. And they're like, oh, I just found them on YouTube yesterday. I'm like, this is really good.
Can you name drop anybody that you
know? I can't. That's what I'm saying.
Good
I'm
deal.
Like, I wrote all these down because I'm like, they're bringing stuff to me because they're out seeking new music that's good. And a couple of these bands are like really, really good.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. There's a few that I had no clue existed. And
yeah,
then now I'm like really into them.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly.
That's good stuff.
Well, yeah, but it's all fun down here. As I said, I come down here, I hang out with you, I go teach.
You know what we do? We go golfing.
Yeah,
we don't golf.
We are not golfing.
No, we are not.
My golf career is long over, my friend.
No, you have to wear a bathing suit when you go golfing because you're always in the sand. I know it. I know it.
No, I do not.
No, you don't. I remember you telling me a story about your mom's radio.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't my mom's radio. It was my mom had, when I was a little kid, she had a stereo, which back in that time period was like a piece of furniture.
Right.
And it was a turntable and this big piece of furniture with speakers on it. And when I was really, really young, she used to play Elvis and the Beatles and Tony Bennett and people like that. And we always had music around our house. So that's when I started listening to music when I was really, really young. During that time, typical story, where I would start banging on pots and pans and oatmeal boxes and whatever there was. And then my parents decided to buy me a drum set because they figured, well, he's beating up all the pots and pans. Let's just get him some drums.
Before he destroys the cutlery.
Right. So, you know, that's the way that went. So.
How old do you think you were when you got the drum kit?
Two and a half, three.
Holy crap. Really young.
Yeah.
So do you remember any songs from that era? Like, what's the first song that you think you can remember? I mean, I know you're old.
thank you.
No, I love you, man.
I think it was a Beatles Ticket to Ride.
Really? Now, were you keeping time with that shit?
Yeah.
So, like, an instinctive thing, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was always like, you know, I always listened to music, and it wasn't really hard for me to do, and I really enjoyed doing it, and it just kind of went on for a long, long, long time, you know?
Clearly. It's still going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you ever take any lessons?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to ask, what was the name of the first kit? Do you remember?
The first kit I got, I believe my parents got out of, and this will show how old I am now, they got out of the Sears catalog.
Oh, wow.
Remember that?
What? No, what is that? Yeah, right. I do remember.
You know what I mean?
Every Christmas, I would bust that thing
basically
out.
Basically, back then, it was the Amazon.
Right.
So I got this kit out of the Sears catalog, and I destroyed that thing in like 2 months. And my dad took me to the local music store, and I come from a really small town, and he bought me a Ludwig Blue Sparkle kit. And I had that for quite a long time. And I went from there because I wrecked the other kit.
Do you have any remnants of that first kit?
No, somebody, it's funny, about 20 some years ago, somebody contacted my mom and said, you know, I have Jimmy's first drum kit, this Blue Sparkle Ludwig kit.
Oh.
Do you think he wants it back? And she called me. I was on tour at the time. And she goes, you know, this gentleman called me if you want your old kit back. I'm like, yeah, great. Call him back. See what he wants for it. And he wanted something like $3,000 or $4,000.
What?
Yeah, right. And I think my dad only paid like $400 for it. You know, I'm like, I want it back, but not that bad. You know
seriously.
What I mean?
That's adverse to most other fans. I think I hear a lot of people saying, you know, they had my bass forever and they wanted to give it back to me. Didn't even want me to pay for it. Bobby Controlla.
Yeah.
He told me
about that. Bob said he gave this bass to his neighbor years ago, like a long time ago, and he just gave it back to him.
It's fucking, you know, nutty,
which
dude.
Is really cool.
I think that is cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I had a guitar that I took over to a wood shop. I was going to refinish it. Mm-hmm. I left it there. And I was hoping, like, oh, you must still have it. He knows how important it was to me.
Certainly.
Fucker, threw it away. Man.
What?
Like, oh, yeah. That's okay. I pissed people off.
Well, I was dumb.
That's my own fault for leaving.
You know, there's a lot of dumb people in the world, so there you go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Amen. How many drum kits do you think you've had in your lifetime?
Over the years?
Yes, sir.
Oh, boy. Oh, probably about 40 or 50.
Oh, my goodness. Which one would you say is your hands down the best one, the most fun that you've ever played?
Oh, man. Jeez, that's a hard question.
I know.
I mean, I've had kits I forgot about, you know. Oh, wow. I've had so many. And, I mean, I still have a lot of kits. I mean, they're all different. They're sort of like guitars, you know. It's like each one has a different tone and a different personality. I can't say... Some I like more than others. I can't say there's one.
Brand preference, perhaps?
Obviously, right now, I endorse Drum Workshop. And okay. I was with them. I mean, I've only been with three companies. When I started out with Y&T and Ozzy, I was playing Yamaha. And I played them for like 2 or 3 years. I left them, and I didn't even have an endorsement for about a year. Then I went to Drum Workshop, and I played them for about... 10 or 12 years.
Wow.
And then I went to Pearl. And all these companies make great drums.
Yeah.
It was just like a sound thing. You're always looking for a new sound. Then I went to Pearl for about 13 or 14 years. And then I went back to Drum Workshop again.
Wow.
And I'm with them now.
Well, so. That's a lot of years, Jimmy.
Dude, you're making me think about it.
So
thanks.
When did you actually get your AARP card?
I never did.
Really?
No.
I got friends that are proud of me. Like, oh, yeah, I got my AARP card. That's funny as hell.
No, I'm cool. I'm good.
All right, so I'm guessing when you were a kid, instead of going out... You're welcome, buddy.
Thank you.
Instead of going outside and playing basketball or baseball, you were inside probably chopping away in the wood shop, yeah?
Exactly.
Right on.
Yeah, because it was fun, you know. When I was younger, I wasn't really... that into sports, or nor was I really good at it. I got better later. I used to play ice hockey when I was a kid because I grew up on the East Coast. We used to have a lot of frozen ponds. So I used to come home after school and put on records and play for like 3-4 hours. And not because there was this career-driven thing. It's just because I like playing music, you know, because I'm a terrible guitar player.
Really?
So, oh, terrible.
I've heard you play
awful.
Guitar. I thought you were a better guitarist than a drummer, man.
God, I wish I was.
Listen, I sit right here and I hear you. So
yeah.
I know. I was going to tell you, sell your gear and give up. There's no future
you
for
do
boss.
Not. But no, I just come home and play all the time. It was fun. I mean, I just like playing songs. And, you know, I used to go buy albums and play along with them. And then I played my first bar when I was like 6 years old. I did a jazz gig.
They got you a fake ID.
I don't think the fake ID would have helped. No, there was there was a music professor that knew my dad, and he goes, we're doing a jazz trio thing at this jazz club on a Friday night. Do you think your kid could sit in? Can he keep time? And my dad said, yeah.
What three-year-old or six-year-old gets asked, hey, we got this jazz trio, and I just want to ask, if your six-year-old isn't watching cartoons that day or
right.
doesn't need his diaper changed, would you mind coming playing drums?
Yeah.
Honest to God, dude, for real. You were that good.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I don't know if I was that good.
Be a little humble about
it. I mean,
it
was all, it was pretty easy gig. I remember I just kept time. It was swing time down, da-ka-da, da-ka-da. And, it was, and then, you know, I started playing weddings and stuff like that when I was about 10. You know, weddings, bar mitzvahs, things like that.
Bar mitzvahs.
And it was cool, you know. And, like, when I was a kid, it was funny because, you know, I was working when I was 10, 11 years old. I would play Friday and Saturday nights. And I always had really cool skateboards and BMX bikes. No. And my friends would go like, oh, your parents buy that? I'm like, no, dude, I'm paying my own way here.
So you're already a professionally paid musician at the age of 10 and 11.
Yeah.
Actually, I would guess at the age of 6, you got paid for the jazz gig.
I don't know if I ever got paid for that.
You might want to collect
No, I might
that.
Want to ask my mom about that.
What's that money at, man?
Yeah, I know. You owe me $40.
Right?
Yeah.
$40. That, you got paid more than we did.
Yeah, right.
First gig at 6, starting to make money, 10, 11. You're already buying the shiny shit that everybody else wants.
I had great BMX bikes.
Dirt biker?
That was BMX back then, yeah.
Do any tricks?
No. Back then, we used to just do jumps. There was no BMX parks. So we used to go to construction sites.
Right.
And in grade piles of dirt and make jumps. Oh, man. It was just funny. And, you know, no helmets whatsoever. Right. Like,
you ever get hurt?
Oh, yeah.
You ever break any bones?
I had a concussion.
Oof.
I've had about 3 of them. Well, that was from skateboarding, though.
You skateboarded, too?
Yeah. I did that for years.
It's great, right? Kept you in shape, right?
I don't know about that, but no, but we would skate, you know, like here again, there were no skate parks back on the East Coast. Well, we used to go in the drainage trenches. Like, they were like spillways.
Oh, okay, I got
you. And we used to go on those. And we used to build plywood ramps off the sides where if you lived in SoCal, they used to go into pools that were drained. And they used to actually drain the pools. If you've ever seen Dogtown Skates.
Yeah, I know about it. I've never actually watched the movie.
So we didn't have pools there for the most part. So we used to go to the drainage trenches, which are really rough. So, yeah, I took a couple good hits there. So
you ever pull one of those Back to the Future deals where you're holding on to the back of a car?
No,
no, oh,
no, no.
Yeah, that was. I've never done that either.
Yeah, I'm not going to either.
Oh, actually, I did. I bailed pretty hard. You know what the wobbles are, right? When you go too fast.
And yeah.
Oh, dude.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
There was no coming back from that.
Oh, yeah, no, there's pretty like, rough. No.
What's the craziest shit you've ever done on a skateboard?
Well, the drainage trenches were pretty nasty.
Brutal.
There was this one hill that you would literally get, and here again, no helmets. We would go. This one kid we used to hang out with had a car, and we would go down this really massive hill. I swear to God, we were going 40 miles an hour on a skateboard, like in a tuck position with no helmets, you know. And I look back at it, I'm like, it's shocking. None of us were killed.
Right. You weren't scared because you're a kid and you don't have that fear of death yet.
No, you're stupid.
Well, yeah, you're totally dumb. You're like, I'm not going to die. I'm living forever. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is ridiculous, this crap we used to do. What's the craziest shit you've ever done? You've told me you've never been arrested, so that's not a story.
No.
So what have you done that's nutty? I mean, you're a fucking rock star. What do you got?
Nothing.
No. Come on, there's something, man.
There's nothing.
No drugs?
No.
I know. That's amazing. How are you like the only rock star who's never done any drugs? Never been arrested, no drugs, no scandal, no, I mean, what are you no arguments with neighbors, nothing?
No.
You're a drummer. You've never pissed off a neighbor? How is that possible?
Well, I'm sure I did that. You know.
Lord knows I have. We once got paid to stop playing because the guy across the street was trying to sell his house. And actually, it was pretty cool because it was the first time we ever got paid. And he bought us pizza and some soda. So we were often not playing just to see if that guy would come back with more money. Let's check this out and see if this is the kind of stuff. If you were Jimmy's neighbor, what would you say?
Oh, my God.
when you were a kid, did you have a little studio at the house or what?
Well, yeah, you know, back in the East Coast, we had basements. Yes. And so I had my drums in the basement. And as I got older, all these guys from high school and college used to come over and jam at my house. And I used to have Marshall stacks in my basement. And we used to play to like 11, 12 o'clock at night. Like, we used to play, like, just jam all the time. And the neighbors, you know, they're all long passed away now, but they never complained. As a matter of fact, it's so funny, the next day I'd go out there and I'd be, like, mowing the lawn and be like, hey, guys sounded really good. And we'd be playing, like, UFO and Aerosmith.
I was going to ask, what were you
playing?
It
was awesome, you know. And I was really fortunate to grow up in a neighborhood where the people around me were really understanding. And it's like, you know, like two doors up lived the bass player, two doors this way lived the guitar player, four doors that way was a singer. So, because music was a big thing back then, as opposed to like now when kids are on their computers and are gaming computers playing Fortnite and stuff like that. Back then, it was more organic. It was like music and BMXing and hockey and, you know, stuff like that, right. You know.
I find that the connection that you make with other musicians that are, like, near you, mm-hmm. you sought out other musicians that were, I guess, geographically close. Hey,
certainly.
You can play? All right, let's do it.
Yeah,
you didn't even
exactly.
care how good they were, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then eventually you become good.
Yeah.
But nowadays these kids, and yeah, you're right, they're on their video games, but mm-hmm. some of these kids are connecting online and creating whole songs just, and they're not even in the same state. So there is a strong music thing, but
yeah.
I find that it's done completely different because you're not grabbing a magazine like Bay Area Magazine and looking for, okay, we need a drummer, man. There's somebody there.
Right.
These were already friends of yours that you were jamming with.
Yeah.
Anybody ever go off to do anything exciting?
Well, they certainly went on to have successful careers, but not in the music biz.
Oh, okay.
You know, so.
And so you were surrounded by people who were driven academically, and you became a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
A drummist.
Mm-hmm. Drummist.
Yes, you said you liked it.
Is that a word?
No, but I always
I just
say
made
man,
that up.
There's a keyboardist, there's a vocalist,
right,
right, a guitarist. I remember it's not a drummist.
A drummist, yeah.
That's right.
Right, yeah, right.
That's
yeah.
not even mine. I can't take credit for it.
No, it's good, though.
So I have a couple of questions that my friends that are fans of yours wanted to ask, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So first off, Art Campos is a salsa guy. He does Cuban salsa. He's a drummer.
Okay.
We were talking about his influences because I'm thinking salsa. He's going to tell me some Cuban drummer or something. Sheila E. I don't know.
Right.
Well, so who influenced you the most? He goes, fucking Megadeth, man. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Hmm.
And he had a question that he wanted to ask you. And that question is, for Art Campos, which Megadeth song was the hardest for you to learn?
Oh.
Ooh, you got him, Art.
You got
Good
me
job,
on that
buddy.
One.
I don't
want to sound arrogant.
No,
but none of them were that hard to learn. The thing that was hard about it was the time span that I had to learn the entire set. I only had like 3 days.
Oh, what happened there?
Well, I was I was in Europe with Alice Cooper, and Megadeth called me to start touring with them, like, in 3 days. So I flew home from, I think I was in Berlin or Frankfurt, and I got home, and I said, I need 1 day off. Like, literally, just, I need a day off. And then I started playing with Megadeth in Fresno, and so those 3 days, like, the last two Alice Cooper gigs, a travel day, and then we start with Megadeth in Fresno, I had 3 days to learn their set list, which was 22 songs.
Wow.
And
what year was this?
99? They were on the Cryptic Writings tour.
Okay. All right.
And so it wasn't hard per se any particular song. It was hard to sort of take in that much information that fast. And we never had a rehearsal. And we just went and played in Fresno. I had like a 20-minute sound check.
Wow.
And that was it.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, it gave me an ulcer.
First off, I have heard you drum. I think you're a very talented guy.
Mm.
I think you might have a chance. It's if you want to pursue it, you got to put in the effort. You know what I mean? That's my advice to you, young man. You told me a story about Alice in Chains.
Right.
I think it's hilarious, and I'd like you to share that story if you don't mind.
I was playing with Suicidal Tendencies, and we were opening for Alice in Chains.
Rock.
And, you know, I really like that band. I like those guys. We did a few dates with them, and it was really cool vibe. And this is when Lane was still alive. One night, I guess Sean got sick, the drummer Sean Kinney. I'm not sure what happened. And so the next night, we did our opening set. We were in Melbourne. We played our set. It was cool. The place was packed. And I'm walking back to the hotel. It was like literally right across the street. And I'm carrying my backpack, and I'm leaving the venue. Mike Inez, the bass player, goes to me like, hey, where are you going? I'm like, I'm going back to the hotel. He goes, hey, we kind of have a problem here. Sean's sick in the hospital. We need a drummer. I said, well, good luck with that. And no, I'm kidding. And I go, okay. And he's like, so can you play? I'm like, yeah, sure. No problem. And I went into the dressing room. They were freaking out because they have a gig to do. The place is packed. And it's like, you know, it wasn't big places. It was only like 2,000 or 3,000 people.
Yeah, tiny, tiny joint.
And they go, do you know any of our songs? And I go, yeah, I know that song about the chicken. And they go, oh, it's the rooster. I'm like, it's all poultry.
It's all poultry? You said that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And right. I'm like, because they're freaking out, and I'm like, whatever. And they go, well, let's just jam Zeppelin songs. And I'm like, no.
You mean for the gig they wanted to do that?
Yeah, just jam something, because all the promoter's there, too, and he's freaking out.
I bet.
You know, because the place is packed, and, like, they can't play. And I go, well, just let me see the set list. And I look at the set list, and I'm like, yeah, we're good to go. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, just play this. It's
Jimmy's
fine.
Jimmy's a savant. You don't know this, Lane?
Because they do have a lot of weird, twisty changes in their songs. They're not as easy as you think. So I go, no, just play the set list the way it is. And they're like, no, let's just jam some covers. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. And I said, I think it'll be fine. So we started out. And we played the first three songs. It was great. Two of the guys in the band turned around and gave me the finger. They're like, see, what I didn't want to tell them is I was a huge fan. Yeah. I knew all their songs.
Right.
So, and we were fine. And then I did the rest of the tour. And that was it.
What was your favorite song to play with them?
Ooh. There's so many. I mean, their first two albums.
Right.
Are so good.
Facelift and.
I mean, Damn That River.
Oh, my God.
Them Bones, Rooster. I wanted to do Love, Hate, Love, but they didn't have it in the set anymore.
I fucking love that song.
Oh, it's amazing.
So they did the Monsters of Rock tour with Slayer, Anthrax, and Megadeth.
Yeah.
Man in the Box was a big tune.
Yeah, that was their single at the time. Right. Yeah.
But my best friend fucking loved them, dude. And we went, they played that song, and I didn't know what it was, and I'd never heard it.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. It's funny that you would point that one out. I want to kill
about
you.
Great song. About 20-some years ago, they put out a live CD with that on it, and it's just amazing.
It really is.
I mean, there's a synergy with those guys with Jerry, you know, unfortunately, Lane has passed, and Sean's drumming. There's just a vibe there, you know? And I don't think it was premeditated. It just kind of happens when you get together with your friends and play music that you can't recreate, you know. And I still think they're great to this day. I mean, obviously they had to transition to Williams singing, but I still think they're great.
I mean,
it's just a different vibe, but they're still a great band and they still have that vibe. I really dug them. I mean, I still do. I still listen to them.
You're pretty much a metal rock drummer, right?
Not really.
No? Okay, no. Yeah. Jazz, would you say? A little pop rock? What are you, into Britney little, Spears? Come on.
I'm just a musician. I don't like to be categorized as like metal.
I would argue that you've done a lot of rock and roll and metal in your career.
Certainly, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was that on purpose then?
No.
Okay, it just happened that way?
Yeah, it just kind of worked out that way. I mean, when I moved to L.A., I was really into jazz fusion, and that's what I wanted to do. And then, by chance, I wound up getting that Aussie gig for a while.
Yeah, so your career is ridiculous. It's as long as a toilet paper roll. How did that happen?
So basically, when I was like 20 years old,
young.
I moved out from Pennsylvania. I loaded up all my drums, and I moved to L.A., and I was only there a couple weeks. I started to break into the session scene.
I walked around L.A. for weeks.
And I was playing pool with a friend of mine one night, and he goes, you know, Ozzy's auditioning drummers down at this rehearsal studio tomorrow. And I'm like, what? Like, that's weird. Like, what happened to their drummer, who's actually a friend of mine? It was Tommy Aldridge. He used to play with Pat Travers.
Okay, yeah.
And Gary Moore, amazing drummer. Yeah. Like, unbelievable. Well, what happened to him? Like, no one knew. I think he just quit or something, so I needed a drummer. So, probably need some time off. He'd been touring a lot at that point. So, I just showed up this rehearsal studio, and they auditioned, like, a couple hundred drummers.
Wow.
And then they said, okay, you want to come to London and record? I'm like, yeah, sure. And that was it.
So what was the first album you recorded with Ozzy?
Well, there's two versions of it. It was the Ultimate Sin album.
Was it?
And we did about four or six songs with this producer, Chris Tangredis, who ironically produced a couple Y&T albums before I was in Y&T, and Thin Lizzy albums, and a bunch of other, and, you know, Black Sabbath. He was like the, you know, English metal producer. He was really, really, really good. If you remember, that whole Live Aid concert came up,
yes.
And Ozzy went to go back to Sabbath to do Live Aid, and then he just basically told everyone in the band to go home for a while.
Okay.
And then that was the end of it.
So Ozzy was your first big gig, yeah?
Yeah.
How did that feel? Were you like, oh my God, I've hit the big time?
it was strange, to say the least.
Okay, why? Because he's strange?
No, he's all right. It was, you know, you have to remember, like then, I was probably 21 years old. I come from a little town in Pennsylvania. Then I moved to L.A. for 5 months, and now I'm in the U.K. and recording an album. So the little, you know, it was kind of like a lot going on.
Shock, yeah.
So, but it was cool. I mean, that's really how I got my break. Then after that, the producer, Chris, recommended me to someone else. And then Y&T called me after that because they got my name from someone else. And it just kind of steamrolled from there.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's amazing. That's really amazing. So what drum beats are you responsible for on the Ultimate Sin album?
You're going to talk to me about this Adele song now.
That's right.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Ultimate Sin, I mean, that was just something I started in the studio, and then you just played me that Adele song.
Yes,
which was actually really good.
It was a great song.
But no, I love her.
Okay, so I'm going to play this
on the But honestly, that's no form of genius or anything. That's really generic. But it's very primal. I'm sure you could find another four or five songs with that beat. But it was just
something.
I'm trying
to cause some controversy, man.
No, there's no controversy.
Yes, there is.
No, I thought that beat
was great.
She owes
you a dollar.
Oh.
Right?
Probably less than that.
Right? You could probably, you know what a mashup is, right?
Yeah.
They take one song, for example, House of the Rising Sun. Okay? You know that song? And then, are you familiar with Metallica's Fade to Black?
Yeah.
Same chords. So you can mix the lyrics from Fade to Black with the music from House of the Rising Sun, and it works.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely, dude. I'll play you something when we're done. I did it with Fade to Black and House of the Rising Sun. I did it with Lamb of God and a Katy Perry song.
Oh, wow.
Oh, and it really works, dude.
Talk about two contrasting styles.
Check it out. Gnarls Barkley's got a song called Crazy. Somebody put Slipknot over it. With my face and my tongue. It works somehow.
Really?
Oh, it's amazing. It really is. Mashups are really cool. But you don't ever think about like plagiarism and things? That's really where I was kind of going with this. Like, do you ever worry about that?
Worry about it.
Well, I don't know if that counts for a drummer or whatever, but I mean, you ever hear anybody doing your beats and go, what the fuck?
No. I mean, if anyone mimics or copies anything I do, I find it flattering.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
I mean, there was a time I was on tour. I was in Chile. And remember when MTV used to have music videos on?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Like a long time
ago? Well, no, I'm not being funny here.
No,
I'm just being...
Yeah, I do. Well, I know. They don't do that shit no more.
Well,
it's all the real world or whatever now.
I was heading over to the arena, and they have, you know, back then they had MTV, you know, North America. They had MTV South America. And they would play videos, and the South American feed would be like bands from Brazil and, you know, countries down there, right?
Understood.
And, I was in the bathroom drying my hair one day, and I had MTV blasting in my hotel room, and there was a song on MTV, and it was this really cool beat. It was like a sort of like a hip hop double bass thing. It was like da 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 da. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And I'm like, and you know, when the video would start, they would show you the name of the band.
Right.
And when the video would end, they would show you the name of the band.
So you had to wait.
Right. So I'm like, I got to see who this is.
White
right.
Zombie, wasn't it?
So I'm like, oh, quick. So I ran out of the bathroom. I got to see who this is. This is really cool. And at the end of the video, they show this band playing in an arena, and it was like really good beat. And it was this band called Animal from Buenos Aires.
Okay.
And then I realized, oh, crap, that's me. I played on their album and I forgot about it.
You're sitting there listening to yourself going, wow, this guy's really good.
I like, this is a cool beat. I'm like, oh, you know, like, oh crap, it's me.
Oh my God. So that you've been in so many bands, that has to have happened a couple of times, I'm guessing.
Yeah, but I mean, that was just a session thing. They called me out of the blue to go and record their album for them down in Los Angeles. I just went down there and mountain bike for a week and just played drums. But, you know, it was just like a moment in time.
So being so infused in the scene and with big time fucking rock stars. Mm. Oh, you know what? Actually, yeah, I got more Megadeth questions, but this is one I've got. Who are your rock stars? Because you're like hobnobbing with some of the biggins. As a drummer who's pretty accomplished, who do you listen to and go, fuck, I love that. Who do you like?
Well, I mean, as far as like, you mean like frontman or bands?
Well, there's like a couple of questions that you can answer there. One, who do you like in terms of a band? Like, who do you listen to if you even listen to music at all? Two, what drummer do you like? Like, if you were going to choose somebody, even if they're fresh and new. And three, tell them how great I am.
All right. Okay.
I'm just kidding. No, who are your rock stars?
Well, as far as bands, you know, I, you know, as we're all getting older, like I, a couple months ago, I watched a thing on TV, the Rolling Stones from Havana, Cuba.
Wow.
And, you know, they've been doing this for 50 some years, and they were great.
I can't believe they're still alive. And they're in great shape too.
Yeah. I mean, they play great. And, you know, in another band would have to be Aerosmith.
Okay.
I mean, they're one of the greatest American rock bands of all time. Another band would be Cheap Trick. Same
really?
Thing. Yeah.
Like Cheap Trick, huh? To name that drummer?
I love them. Well, the original drummer's name is Bunny Carlos.
Okay.
The fact that they're still sustaining after all these years, because, you know, touring and recording is a lot of work. People don't realize it. They think it's this, like, sort of like this really glamorous life. It's a lot of work.
It is. And you come from, not to say, this is not an old joke. I've been teasing you a little bit, but this is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You come from an older era where people were using like tape to record. You had to have a engineer with a razor blade and cutting it, doing all that stuff.
Right.
That's your era, right?
Well, yeah, it was analog for years, and then it switched to all the computer stuff.
Right. Have you done any of that yet?
Oh, yeah.
What do you like better?
Analog.
Why?
Because, you know, now we live in an era now where, you know, you could do an album and I could sit in a room like this and record drums and I could send the files to someone else and they do the bass and then he sends the files to the guitar player and he does the guitar. You know, when I started, we would all be in a room together playing and it was loud and it was like juicy and it was just like, you know, it was like real interactive.
Yes.
You know? And it wasn't always perfect, but that was the vibe.
Exactly.
And I think, and music is not meant to be perfect. It's a form of expression. And it doesn't have to be computerized and, you know, made, you know, completely perfect.
Maybe it's a little too mechanical.
For sure. But now with this whole pandemic stuff, you know, the last couple of years, that's the way we've been doing it. I'll record tracks, I'll send them to this person, they go to that person, then they go to the singer, and he sings over it, and it's done. And the things I've done sound great. I mean, they come out great. I just miss the thing where you're all in the room together, you just jam, and they put the mics on everything, and then it goes where it is. And if we have to splice something here and there, yeah, okay. It's not much, believe me.
Yeah, a lost, dying art, I believe.
Certainly.
I think it's interesting. It blows my mind, actually, when you think about what it takes to record onto tape and to have the engineer, because there's the producer who's telling you, no, do this, do that, and then you have the engineer who's splicing it and then taping it together and making it work.
Yeah.
Taping two pieces of tape together,
yeah.
If you've ever had a cassette tape and you broke
your
cassette.
Yeah, right, if you broke your tape, right.
Like, fuck, man, I can do this. I can do you a little engineer, man. Yeah. Become an engineer. But maybe 2 seconds of the song is missing, but you still got it back together.
Well, I was never in any situations where we spliced a lot. I know we did it sometimes, and it was usually to edit out a section like, you know, the B section's too long, it's 16 bars, let's cut it down to 8, or something like that. And that's the advantage of using Pro Tools. Now, you can just click on the mouse and
copy
just
and paste.
Reduce it. It's, yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then you would just cut half of it out and tape it back to get together, you know, and that's the way we would do it.
Right,
you know,
right. So I think that's neat. I think that's really cool.
Like, I think it's great.
The Beatles taking
I miss doing that.
Nobody does it, huh?
I don't think so. I mean, nothing like that I've heard of recent.
Okay, look at the way society is today. Mm. We have people who are like stuck on 70s and 80s music. People love the Eagles. They love...
Certainly.
It's popular, and they don't want to hear new stuff.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I think, you know, rock music in particular has become really nostalgic, I guess. You know... And I totally understand this. They want to hear the songs they grew up with, okay? And, like, when I was a kid, right, I would go see Van Halen, for example, right? Okay. Then years later, I'd play with David Lee Roth up until the Van Halen reunion. Now, I went to Van Halen concerts in the 80s. Now, it was a different vibe, you know? It was all teenagers. It was a drunken debacle. And it was great, right? And they were awesome. So when Dave went back to Van Halen years ago, I went to go see him downtown here at the Shark Tank. And a completely different vibe. You have parents coming in with their kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, it's like, which is cool because the kids are into it. You know, it's almost like 20-some years ago, I went to go see Paige Plant.
Okay.
In Philly. I had a night off, so I went down to the Spectrum when it was still open, and I think they tore it down, which is the big arena in Philadelphia. And place was packed, and they're playing Zeppelin songs, obviously. And I saw teenage kids in the front row singing all the Led Zeppelin songs. I thought, that's really cool, because it's transcended the generations. It's like your parents... And then their kids, and now it's kind of getting to the grandkids, you know?
It is. There's something about their music. I try to find bands everywhere, artists, wherever, just to talk to them and get their take on things. There's a band in Germany called Denman Tau. But I asked him, like, what song really speaks to you? And he said it's Stairway to Heaven. Do you remember they came out with The Song Remains the Same? The video?
The movie.
Yeah, or whatever the movie. And
yeah, I went to see it at a theater when I was a kid.
It ran in the theaters?
Yeah.
Wow, what's a theater, sir? I'm just kidding.
You remember that?
They've got them. They've just been around. He was talking about how they was kind of spoke to him. What's your favorite song of all time if you had to pick one song that you could listen to for the rest of your life?
Oh, man, I can't answer that.
Had to be Animal, right?
No.
Something you wrote? Something you
No, nothing I wrote, believe me.
What do you listen to nowadays? You get in the old car, what do you listen to?
Everything. It's weird. I mean, like, I could put old Van Halen, Cheap Trick, Aerosmith, like Neil Young.
Really?
Yeah.
Neil Young?
Put on some jazz stuff you wouldn't know about. Put on like Tony Williams' Lifetime.
Okay.
Or some Buddy Rich stuff.
Of course.
Like a mix. Or, you know, Miles.
All right.
I mean, everything. I mean, I don't really have any one thing, you know?
Good. It's good to stay eclectic. Do you have any new bands that you listen to that you're excited about?
Quite honest, not really.
I really do have a lot of different stuff that I listen to.
Oh, I bet you do.
I totally do. In fact, here's something I've been listening to lately.
Have you ever noticed your child marching to the beat of their own drum? Oh, yeah. I said it. They drum on things.
They drum on everything. The pots, the pans, boxes, their desk at school. Maybe it's time to get them drum lessons from the Rhythm Academy San Jose. Maybe you call 408-529-9008 and sign them up. Or maybe you go to www.rhythmacademysj.com and you find out that we're open 7 days a week, that you can choose your instructor, and that we teach various styles and genres from world-renowned teachers. Don't tell them I said anything, but if you sign up for 4 lessons, we'll give you the 5th one for free. The Rhythm Academy San Jose. All drums, all day. Who was your favorite band to play with?
I get that question all the time.
Okay, forget that question then.
No, I mean, it's unanswerable because it would be disrespectful to the other ones.
I got
you. But they were all a different entity. They all had their own vibe. You know, I mean, the one thing is when I look at it, you know, I've been really fortunate to play with some of the greatest guitar players in the world.
You have.
Like Dave Menichetti, Jakey Lee, Warren DeMartini, Carlos Cavasso, Ronnie Montrose.
What's Fiona?
Oh, she's a girl singer, really, really good. She is. She's not dead. she was an actress. She's actually from the East Coast as well. She's a really, really good singer. And she did a couple movies. She was on Miami Vice. And she had a big MTV hit duet with Kip Winger in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, I was a huge Kip Winger fan.
I thought Winger was great.
Really?
They used to get slagged a lot. I'll tell you what, I did a show with them a couple years ago. Freaking guys are great, man. They play great. They're really good.
Okay.
No, I'm serious.
I believe
I know you're giving me like stink eye here.
Well...
No, those guys are badass players, man.
There's just something about Kip Winger that kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Well, you know what it was? In the 80s and the 90s, the presentation on MTV really got sort of homogenized. Everyone had to have, you know, your poofy hair black stretch leather jeans and all this crap. And I think a lot of the music, it was.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, I'm totally right.
That's why I said it. I actually wore spandex at some point.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
And those guys are monster players. They wrote great songs.
Don't let me talk shit about somebody who's got a fucking big hit and has done it. I'm sitting here going, fuck Kip Winger. But the truth is, the guy got a record contract, it was on MTV.
No, he's incredibly talented. I mean, if you have to be pretty talented to have any level of success in this biz. And even if you don't care for them, you have to respect it. Because it's not easy.
So it's hard for me to respect people that I don't like their music. Because I feel as though this is what you're doing. And you don't have to go totally metal for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just... Okay, 17 is going over in my head right now. He's only 17.
Yeah, sure.
17. Yes, that's hooky.
That's probably not their best song on the album, okay. But that's the song that the record label pulls and goes, this is a single, where they probably had 5 other better songs.
Give me a song that Kip Winger did that you like, that I should listen to change my mind.
Oh, Headed for Heartbreak. That's a great song.
Heartbreak.
It's a great song. And the drumming on that's amazing. Rod Morgenstein? That guy's insane.
Yeah, I know that name. He's done other
stuff. He used to play with the Dregs, the Dixie Dregs.
I don't know that.
Oh, they're like sort of like a fusion prog rock band from the 70s. The guitar player, Steve Morris, went on. He's playing with Deep Purple for the last 30 years.
Oh, wow.
No, those guys are monster players.
Yeah, I can't say anything about people who have gold records on their wall, right?
No, you cannot.
Like, people have been talking a little bit of shit about Metallica because they've gotten old and their records or whatever.
Well, we're all getting old.
Right? Well, yeah, people age. You were talking about going to Led Zeppelin and seeing these kids with their parents and the grandkids. I went to Metallica 40, and that's what it was like.
Mm.
Everybody that was our age way back when, and I'm a little bit younger than you, just a little bit, and we were all used to be the jeans that tore holes and everything.
Yeah.
And now we're all wearing nice clothing, trying to be all
well. That's because all the fans now are like working at like Apple and Google. You know what I mean?
It's really weird.
They have like real day jobs now. You know,
it's a trip.
Oh, it's wild. Times have changed. But I think it's great. I mean, it's funny because, like you said, the bands get older, the fans get older. But the younger generation, because I have kids, like, they're really into music. And you know, I deal with a lot of young people with drum students and stuff. They're really familiar with music from the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Right.
You know? And it's really interesting because, you know, I asked him, like, what are you into? He's like, I really like the Beatles. I'm like, wow. The Beatles broke up 30 years before you were even born. You know, or, you know, they like Nirvana, you know, yes. And they haven't existed in 26, 27 years.
You know what's weird about Nirvana? The lead singer of the Foo Fighters, if that dude would shave, he would look just like Dave Grohl from Nirvana. I couldn't help it. That's like my favorite joke right now.
You're an ass.
I am an ass. I'm a huge ass.
Well, that guy writes some great songs, I'll tell you that. No,
he is a fucking beast.
No,
right?
that guy is like, he's really, really talented. I took my kids to see him down to Shark Tank a couple years ago, and they were great. They're really good.
You know that first Foo Fighters album, that's all him?
Yeah, he did it himself. I just saw a thing with Dave a couple weeks ago. He was talking about the same problems I have where, you know, he was saying, I'm going to paraphrase here, during the pandemic, we're all wearing masks. And he's like, I can't understand a freaking word because he said the same thing I've been doing. I've been reading lips for 20 years. So now that you have a mask over your face, I can't hear, I can't read your lips. I have no idea what anyone's freaking saying.
Did you ever get vaccinated?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I know, I mean, I don't know if that offends anybody, but whatever.
I don't understand why, I don't get it, I don't want to talk politics.
Yeah, I don't want to either. That's why I did.
So. Let's talk about a lighter subject. Cancer, what do you think of that? I'm just kidding.
You're an ass.
I'm an ass. I'm a huge ass.
Cancer.
I'm just kidding, man.
Come on.
Okay, I know. All right. Well, how about this? Here's Jimmy in action. Okay, so I want to ask you about fulfillment, about finding something and doing things that help make you feel fulfilled when it comes to art or music. I mean, I'm talking drawing or creating music. None of it has value until someone gives it value. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like a painting. You can't tell me that this is worth $20,000 until somebody says it's worth $20,000. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So do you struggle with that kind of thing at all?
I used to, but no, I don't.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean,
since I was a little kid, and we've already talked about this, you know, music brings me joy.
Right.
Right. And I never really thought about what it brought to somebody else. And I've had some friends over the years that have talked to me about this, where they've said, you know, and they have real jobs, right? You know, like, you know, they're lawyers and doctors. And
yeah, those are real jobs.
Those are real jobs.
Regular people jobs.
Yeah. So, and they said, you know, it's like, you know, like, say I'll be playing in town, say I'll be playing the Shark Tank, whatever, with whoever, whatever, whatever,
yeah, just
whatever.
A regular Friday.
And I don't think anything of it.
Right.
Because that's just another day in a life. And they said, we see that come up. We look forward to that for months.
Yeah.
Because, like, we really love music. And then, you know, and then if you're actually playing in that particular band, it's even better. And I'm like, oh, I really never thought about that. It's the same way I never thought about it when I started out. I just played music and drums because I just enjoyed it. There was, like, no, like, grand plan behind it. Right. I just always played music.
Yeah, this has been your path since the beginning, I think.
Yeah.
You're probably kicking in your mama's womb the same way, like,
probably.
With rhythm. Were either one of your parents musicians?
My dad was.
Really? What did he do?
He played a bit of everything. He played drums. He played some brass. Uh-oh. I think he played accordion.
Oh, wow.
Which is big on the East Coast, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I got a little concerto over here. You know how to play?
Oh, God, no.
All right. Well, whatever.
Badly, yes. Do I play bass and guitar?
Yeah, but you said you were terrible.
I'm terrible.
All right.
Awful.
But you still play them?
Yeah, sometimes.
What do you like to play when you pluck?
I just screw around. I mean, you know, I'll come up with things. I mean, you know, when I was with Y&T, I wrote a couple songs here and there. And it was really embarrassing because I would come in the morning in a rehearsal and I would have this lick and I have to play it in front of Dave and Steph, who were like, you know, unbelievable guitar players. And I'm like, sorry, but here it is. And they just like chuckle and like, all right, we'll fix it. You know, because I mean, I'm just, it's weird. It's like, I could play bass okay, but guitar has always been really strange for me.
A lot of drummers start out on the piano or the guitar.
Yeah, I wish I would have taken piano lessons when I was a kid. I would understand theory a lot better than I do now. And actually, my mom offered to get me piano lessons, and I wasn't interested. I'm like, I just want to play drums. And I should, but you know, I was really young then.
So hindsight, you would have taken.
Oh, totally.
So if you could go back in time and talk to little Jimmy, what would you say?
Piano lessons.
Piano lessons, that's your big advice?
Yeah.
Piano lessons, Jimmy. What is the best piece of musical advice you've ever been given?
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, thank you very much.
Fucking hard questions for a Friday night. Honestly, I've never been given any.
Nobody tells Jimmy what to do.
No one. I just kind of crashed my way through the whole thing. Because there's no roadmap for this. I mean, when you're getting ready to leave high school, your junior year, you go to the guidance counselor or the career enhancement department, and they're like, what colleges do you want to go to and apply to? And you take your SATs, and what do you want to be?
Wow, is that what happens?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, hey, you missed that, huh? Yeah. But I'm like, I want to be a drummer. And they're like, you can't do that. I'm like, I can't.
Why?
Well, they don't know. It's right. Like, well, like, what do you mean you want to be a drummer? Like, I want to be a drummer and I want to be in a band and make albums. And that's what I said. They're like, well, can you go to college for that? I'm like, I can go to Berkeley, but I don't want to.
Why not? What's wrong with Berkeley?
Nothing's wrong with Berkeley.
You don't want to get stoned and sit there and play the congos in front of a sorority all day?
No, I will not.
I feel like that's the path for me.
Yeah. Well, maybe that is a path for you.
It might be.
Well, it's not too late when you leave here later tonight.
It's going to happen.
I know, Will.
I believe in myself.
Yeah, you're scaring me now.
So you told your guidance counselor you wanted to be a drummer.
You know, you can't do that. I'm like, why not? It's like, well, there's other drummers and bands. I just want to go make albums. Right. They were albums then.
How many albums do you have under your belt?
How many have I done?
Yeah.
I have no idea anymore.
It's ridiculous. Your discography is huge.
Yeah.
You have a huge discography. Do you feel proud of yourself about that one, buddy?
I guess. I don't know.
What, you're looking at the computer? You don't even know what you've got?
I don't want to know.
Oh, they still owe me money.
No, I don't. Yeah, right. That's why I don't want to look. I'm like, who hasn't paid me yet?
What was your biggest hit?
I don't know. I don't follow a lot of that stuff. I just go out and play. You know, it's funny.
All right.
Like, you know, I have my musician friends. And
yes.
You go into their house, and they have gold albums hanging up and stuff like that, which is really, really cool.
I took mine down because I knew you
did
were
coming. You? Okay.
Yeah,
well, you have a lot of other stuff up. And, you know, in posters with them and this and that. And I'm like, if you come into my house, you would never know I play drums.
What do you have on the walls? Paintings,
nothing.
Pictures, nothing?
Pictures of my kids.
Somewhere there's a Y&T condom?
No, there is not.
No, there's not? Why not?
No.
Problem with the ink?
No, exactly.
That blew my mind when you told me that.
I know. Wasn't that the weirdest marketing?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So who came up with the idea for a Y&T condom?
I don't remember. It was just like... But
pulled off the market because the ink was infecting the, you know, the young
Well,
ladies.
No, they didn't want the record company came up with it, and then they decided not to do it because they didn't know if the ink would cause liability issues.
That's ridiculous. Were they working condoms?
I didn't use them. I have no idea. But, I mean, I just remember, like, this is really getting surreal now when this is our marketing plan. You know,
a little Spinal Tap-ish, huh?
Very Spinal Tap.
Would you ever play with Spinal Tap?
Oh my God, that would be funny as shit.
Wouldn't it be great? They'd have you explode. You'd explode.
Yes.
Right?
The last gig you'll ever do. And there's another guy pops up.
Right?
Spontaneous combustion. The
Man,
drummer blew
cool.
up.
You know, Mick Fleetwood played with them for a second.
Did he really?
Well, they were auditioning drummers for a minute. I think in the 80s or 90s. I can't remember exactly when. And he went up with a disguise on.
That would be perfect.
Right? I think it would be cool. I'm going to do it. You got a set of sticks I can borrow?
Yeah, sure. No, that would be funny. That would be a nice way to end my career.
Right?
And at the end of it, play with Spinal Tap, and that's it. I'm game over. I'm out.
That would be cool. We can have you explode on the stage.
Yeah, I don't know if my life insurance covers that.
No, well, maybe not explode in like a, you know,
like an exploding way.
Right.
Yeah.
Not in an exploding way? What other kinds of ways are there?
I think that's the only way.
It is. Is there music that gets you?
There is, but I won't tell you.
Oh, why not?
Ooh.
All right. He didn't even tell me why not. Okay. What is something that Jimmy does when he has nothing to do, can't ride his bike, is alone at the house, nobody's calling, you have a day off, what do you do? Yahtzee, what are you? Jimmy Rummy by yourself?
I don't even know what that's like. There's always something
busy?
To do. Yeah.
What time do you go to bed?
Oh, anywhere between 11 and 3.
Okay, all right.
So
I know when you do play, wherever it is you play, I know you play early. You prefer that, yes?
When I do local gigs, yeah, I like it. It's you know, it's funny, even when you do tours, like I did a tour a couple years ago with Alice Cooper. It was Alice Cooper and Rob Zombie, right? And, you know, they're like, the manager's like, who plays first? And Alice was like, let's play first.
Right.
Let's get out of here. Because basically, so we would play at 8, like 9:30. So by 10, we're having dinner. By 11, we're on the bus. We're driving out of town. Now, if you play at 9:30, you're playing till 11:15. You don't get out of there till 1, 2. You know, and we like, let's play and get the hell out of here.
Yes.
You know, and I'm like, yeah, I totally agree. Because the other thing with it is, too, when you play to 11:30 at night, you can't turn your adrenaline off for 2-3 hours. So you really can't go to sleep till 3-4 in the morning. And then you wind up doing that thing where you sleep till like 11 a.m. or noon, which I hate doing. Like, I want to get up like 7 or 8 in the morning. I want to go run. I want to go bike. Well, I might even actually play golf from time to time.
I was going
to
mention golf.
It's very bad. It's worse than my guitar playing. But I'd rather do that. And so I'd rather go on early. And that's why, like some of the local gigs you've seen, I'd rather play early and get home. because I don't, you know, I don't want to be out schlepping gear like 2-3 in the
and
morning.
You're the one schlepping your own gear. You don't even have a roadie.
Sometimes.
I've seen it.
Yeah. No, sometimes I have a friend that helps me out with my stuff here for local gigs. And the local gigs, you know, as you know, we only do for fun.
Right.
Because there's no money in it at all.
No, maybe $12.
If that. But I just like to go out and play with my friends. So I really don't care about the money. It's just I want to go out and jam.
Yeah, I know you don't care about the money because you already have some and you're fine. Those of us who don't have any, we're still... That $12, I want that $12. What is that, a 50-cent piece? I'll take it.
Yeah, right.
Wow, man. That's really fun, Jimmy. If no one ever listened to your music, would you still play?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. It's an easy one. And I've had this discussion with someone in a well-known band who's a good friend of mine, and they're only going to tour another year or two.
Okay.
And then they're going to be done. And we were just shooting the shit. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. And he goes, man, you know, what am I going to do then? I'm like, what do you mean, what are you going to do? You're going to play. You're going to play no matter what. You play if there's 100,000 people there. You play if there's one. Or you play if there's no one. You're always going to play. Yeah. Being a musician is part of your life force. I like when there's people there. If there's no one there, whatever. I'm still going to play. I mean, when I go into my studio and play by myself, I'm still playing. I still enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's fun when there's people there, and it's more fun when you could play with your friends and interact, and you could feed back and forth and, you know, kind of mess around with each other and stuff like that.
I've seen you do that on stage.
Yeah, and I do that a lot, and it's fun. It brings joy to my heart when I do that. So you always do that. You just don't stop playing.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, well, there's no paycheck. I guess I won't play. No.
Some people are like that.
Some people are like that. I can't imagine that.
I don't know. Well, some people have some issues. I think that music is more than cathartic. It's deeper than that. It's really mental. It really is mental. We use it as a form of therapy.
Yes.
And we will let it. We will allow ourselves to not play it if we're really in a dark place. There's a guy, I'm not going to say wherever he's from, but he hurt his leg and now he doesn't want to play guitar. I don't even understand the correlation. You hurt your leg.
I don't understand that either. I don't know. It's different. Everyone's different and their creative spirit is different as well.
Right.
So, I mean, I've seen a lot of that, you know. I've seen people who have stopped playing for extended periods of time. I mean, but I'm playing more probably in the last couple years than I ever have.
How often do you practice? Every day?
I don't really call it practicing. I call it playing.
Oh, okay. How often are you playing with yourself? Well, you say you go down in the basement or whatever.
No, I go into the studio at my house, and play. And I'm like, and I might go in there and play for only 2 minutes. Like, I get some sort of rhythmic idea in my head, and I'll just go mess around with it. I'll go do something else. I'll go for a ride or something like that, and I'll come back, and I'll play for like an hour.
Oh, wow.
And then I got something else going on, you know, but I always play.
You listen to music when you ride?
No.
Do you have a rhythm, a tempo going when you're riding?
No, I don't. You know, I'll tell you exactly why I don't, and I've seen this for years. I do a lot of mountain biking, and I know a lot of people wear, you know, AirPods and earbuds and all this stuff. I got news for you. Where I ride, there's a lot of mountain lions and wildlife, and I want to hear what's going on around me.
It is dangerous.
Many times, I've heard things in the brush around me, like growling and stuff like that, because there is a lot of mountain lions and bobcats around here. And the bobcats don't scare me. The coyotes don't scare me. The mountain lions kind of scare me.
They're going to get you and carry you off, and then there goes Jimmy. Bye-bye.
Yeah, right. So I don't want to go out that way, so... But I want to hear, and the same thing when I road ride. Like, when you're on the road, I've gotten a lot more dangerous road cycling around here, especially with the traffic and people are on their iPhones.
You bicyclists, though, if I can speak to the bicyclists, why do you guys have that whole wide lane, but then you're right on the damn line and scare us and make us feel like we're going to hit you, even though you've got the whole rest of the lane? Why do you guys do that?
You know, I'll tell you why, because basically, if you stay far right, there's a lot of debris on that far right. And the other thing is, too, what happens, and I'll tell you right now, if you stay far right in the bike lane, people come into the bike lane.
What?
Oh, I've been hit by cars like 3 times.
What?
Yeah. Like you know, you have a bike lane that's like this wide, right?
Yeah, like,
my hands
like
are like
maybe?
two feet apart.
Right, right.
So I'll be over here. The car will be in here. I've been hit by like people's side view mirrors on my arm like 2 or 3 times. And I'm like, what are you doing? Yeah. And I could already see it. I look over and they're like this. They're driving like this.
Looking at their phone.
They're on their phone.
Bastards. This is shitty driving.
Yeah.
We should get a job at DMV and start changing this shit.
Yeah, well, that's going to take a long time. But no, I mean, I've been hit a couple times.
Not anything serious, right?
No, I mean, a couple, you know, contusions here and there. But and that's why I don't road bike that much. I only go out on the road maybe 1 or 2 days a
week.
That's
scary as shit.
It's dangerous.
You wear a helmet, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh. Well, when you were younger, you didn't. I'm just making sure you do now.
No, nobody did.
Somebody contused you.
Yeah.
I don't want
no, concussed.
Concussed.
It's concussed.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So. I've been concussed a few times.
I'm sure you have.
All right.
Starving musician.
It's a store.
Starving musician.
It's a lifestyle.
Starving musician.
It's where you buy your first guitar. It's where you buy your next guitar. It's where you buy your drums. Pedals?
Yeah.
Deals?
Yeah.
Awesome?
Yeah.
Starving Musician Santa Clara, Santa Cruz, Berkeley.
Starving Musician.
What's up, all you metalheads? This is Norman Skinner from Nevaeh and Skinner, and you are listening to The Ink Spot.
Who influenced you as a drummer?
Well, I mean, it goes back to Buddy Rich.
Okay.
And Ringo.
Ringo Starr.
So, absolutely.
Okay, I don't know because I'm not like deep into it the way you guys are. People know your style. Every drummer has a different way of playing. The way you play, I'm so novice at it that I can't pick out the details.
Mm.
So, but I heard somebody saying, you could have done this, but Ringo Starr did this. And he used to do very unique things with the Beatles songs. Is that right?
Absolutely.
All right. Which one's your favorite one?
Ticket to Ride.
Oh, that's right. You said that.
And Aerosmith copped it years later, that song they had, Jaded. Jaded.
I don't know that song.
Yeah, it came out about 2002, I think. The same beat.
Really?
Because they were really into the Beatles as well. No, he came up with great parts. They weren't technically hard songs to play as a drummer, but he came up with great songs.
Okay.
Or great song parts, I guess.
The way he used the instrument. Is there a drummer that made you look at your instrument differently than just a regular old boom taka 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 taka?
Yeah, that would probably be Neil Peart.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. What are your thoughts on Neil Peart?
I can't even explain it. It's like when I was younger, you know, I was into the big band drumming, the jazz drumming, and then the rock drummers. You know, the guys from that time period. And then I remember I bought the live Rush album, All the World's a Stage. And I wasn't really that familiar with them because they weren't obviously not on the radio at all at that time. This is before they had radio success. And his approach to drumming was so far someplace else. So it just made you, I don't want to say rethink, but it just was like, well, he just had a different approach. The way he put together drum parts or songs where he could create a part that was so like, it's different than anyone else would come up with. Okay. But it didn't take away from the song. It made the song better. It was just like he just came out of left field, you know. Unbelievable.
So hands down your favorite drummer?
One of them.
Aside from yourself?
I'm sorry, no, not myself, believe me. I don't have, like I can't say, well, here's my favorite drummer in the world because I have, like so many of them and admire so many, like the work these guys have put out and the things they've recorded and accomplished. That's the only way I can explain it. Because there's been so many incredible drummers in my lifetime that I have listened to and I've gotten ideas from. So there's not one guy like, this is the best guy. Music is not something, it's not a competition sport. Here's the best music and here's the worst music. No. You know, it's a thing where it's like everyone's got their own interpretation and their own style. And you have to appreciate all of it because the amount of work and sacrifice that goes into it all for all these guys. And that's why I like this guy, I like that guy, I like this guy, I like this, I love this guy, you know what I mean? And I've gotten ideas from all of them. They've been a great inspiration to me.
You take a little bit from every single person that you like.
Exactly.
Well, then why do all interview people ask you, well, what's your favorite this? Who's your favorite that? Why is that the question that we all seem to go to?
Well, I don't know, because that's a fallback, I guess.
What do you want to be asked? If you were going to interview yourself, what would you ask yourself?
That's a good question.
There you go. Fuck, I finally got one.
I got one. I have no idea. You know, I pretty much talked about everything tonight, so.
I really appreciate you sharing.
No, man. Thanks for having me in. That
no
was
problem,
fun.
Dude. The last question I have for you is, do you sing in the shower?
No.
No?
I used to.
Oh, what kind of songs would you sing in the shower?
Probably Cheap Trick songs.
Cheap Trick songs. Not Beach Boys?
What's that?
Not the Beach Boys?
No. Go God. You need like 19 people to sing those songs.
Right?
Because of all the harmonies.
It's amazing, right? You ever sing?
Yeah, yeah.
Anything you've recorded?
Yeah, I've done backgrounds on a couple albums, yeah.
Ooh.
I used to sing backgrounds with Megadeth. I think I did some with Y&T. I did some with Alice Cooper. I don't sing lead. I mean, there's some drummers that are unbelievable at singing lead and playing drums. I am not one of those.
Who?
Oh, well, I can tell you right now, Dean Castronova.
I don't even know who that is.
Journey.
Really?
Kelly Keegi from Night Ranger. I mean, it's really... Eric Singer from Kiss. Okay. Eric sings all night long.
Really?
I mean, all these guys, it's really hard to play hard and breathe and sing. Like, I have a hard time with it. That's why I only do backgrounds, you know? But those guys are amazing. I wish I had half their talent.
I do, too. Well, I can't thank you enough for doing this.
You're
welcome. Really appreciate it. You're a great guy. If there's anything you want to say to anybody, say it.
No, I don't have anything to say. I think we've said everything we have to say tonight.
Sure. Like one more thing, like Yahtzee or something?
Yeah, Yahtzee.
Yahtzee. Yeah.
There you go, Yahtzee.
Ladies and gentlemen, that
sibilance.
Is...
Sibilance. Sibilance.
What's sibilance?
Tom Hanks did that on the Wayne's World skit on Saturday Night Live when he's the roadie. He goes up to the mic. When Aerosmith is going, he goes, sibilance, sibilance.
I don't remember that at all.
No.
Speaking of Wayne's
World. That's because you're young.
You were in Wayne's World.
Yes, I was.
What was that like?
Just
like a music video?
Basically, yeah.
All right. Did you get to meet Mike Myers or anything?
Oh, yeah.
Did you make fun of him?
No.
No? Was he a nice guy?
Yeah.
Dana Carvey?
Yeah. I saw Dana at San Jose Airport a couple years ago.
Really? Yeah. Did he remember you?
No.
Of course not. No. You could walk down the street and be okay, right?
You
ever get recognized?
Sometimes. Not much.
I've never seen anybody fan out about you until I introduced you to a friend of mine. He came in here after he met you and did the fucking happy dance. What the hell, dude? And he's like, oh my God, you don't even know.
That's really funny.
It is funny. But I appreciate you being such a humble guy. I like that you keep your private life private. I think that's inspiring.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of us idiots just want to be famous and walk down the street. I want to walk into a restaurant, have everybody recognize me, make 20 grand, go back home, take a nap. That's the goal for me, buddy. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of this episode of The Ink Spot. And I think I'm going to call this one, "The Grasso's Always Greener on the Other Side."
Yeah, and that is a wrap.
That is a wrap. Ladies and gentlemen, keep your ears bleeding for the next episode. Get the hell out of here, man.
This concludes The Ink Spot, brought to you by Music Ink Studios, San Jose.
Adios. Take care. Drive slow.